Venerable Bhikkhus, brothers and sisters, the subject of the discourse today is doubts created by the devotees about their progress. In the first instance, I wish to tell you that if we have 10 devotees, 10 devotees are 10 different persons with 10 different temperaments, 10 different backgrounds, 10 different views they possess, and they have different ways of thinking. In that respect, rather, their mind is concerned, there is no one path, distinct path they follow as worldlings. They have their weaknesses, they have their strong points. The path shown by Buddha is a realistic path. There is no doubt at any point. And distinctly he shows you as to what you should do. Therefore, the progress depends entirely upon the effort you make and the progress you make along the path. If we take two persons, both may be very energetic and persevering, One may have the capacity to progress faster than the other. Maybe due to difference in their state of intelligence of understanding. One may take a little time to understand a thing. The others may grasp the subject quicker than the other. So likewise, there are various differences. And bear in mind always that we are not doing anything very much with the body. The body we are forgetting at the very start. And it is the mind that we are dealing with subsequently. Therefore, the progress you expect should be created in the mind. And the development of the mind is not a very easy one. No two persons' mind will agree with the same thing. Even if they agree, there may be differences in view of their point of view about certain aspects connected with the path. Therefore, all this is to emphasize the fact there cannot be a uniform development in all the persons who participate in following this path. Because their inner differences are many, capacities are varied, understanding too is not so sharp as in some cases, and the realization therefore is not the same in all cases. But one essential thing is, in this Dhamma, if we have realized the Dhamma, it must be convincing to you. You must be convinced that you have attained that height. You must be satisfied that you have given up your defilements. And such defilements which you made a great effort to get rid of, you have got rid of them. And they are no longer affecting you. There may be instances where certain defilements are suppressed momentarily, and possibility that they may arise again. But if you have clearly pursued the path, after all, we are all working for wisdom and nothing else. It's just not a state of mind that you create in samadhi and live in that. This is realistic understanding realistically experiencing the truth. Therefore, there can't be a difference in two persons' opinions about what each has attained. After all, Buddha has clearly stated that you have to get rid of defilements. And those defilements are 10 in number, the fetters. And your effort from the very beginning is to get rid of them. To understand the true state of things, you have to develop your mind from a worldly level to a higher level. And that is the exercise we perform at the very inception. Virtue is basically needed so that you have a calm atmosphere about you. Undisturbed by incidents you have committed. And with that calm atmosphere created by virtue, which you are observing, either in the nature of 5 precepts or 8 precepts or 10 precepts, you create that atmosphere in the first instance. After that, to make the mind sharp, steady, one-pointedness is developed. There are differences of opinion about this. Developing of the one point, that some say that it is not necessary. Realization can come to a mind in an ordinary way, undeveloped mind, which I doubt. The answer to that question is, you have lived the life completely believing and guiding yourself on 3 false values. And those 3 false values are permanence, satisfaction and continuity. You have lived your life in those 3 possibilities or those conditions as they are existing and that they are true. And the impression they have created in your mind is very strong. You can't delete that by just repeating something. When a strong impression has been created, there must be a sound approach to overcome that impression or delete that impression by clearly impressing upon oneself the true nature of things. Opposed to these 3 false values, permanence, satisfaction and continuity are the 3 realities, impermanence, unsatisfactory nature of things and the soullessness. You have lived a life in false values, accepting those 3 false beliefs, and now you are setting upon yourself a way to clear these false views out of your mind. They have created very strong impressions in your mind because you have lived in those 3 things. And if you are going to deface them out of your mind, a higher approach, a strong approach must be made so that the impression you create subsequently in pursuing the new values like impermanence, unsatisfactory nature of things and the soullessness must create an indelible impression in your mind. And Buddha has clearly said that the 3 truths are not found on the surface but found in depth. And they have to be realized. And realization can come only through a developed mind in one-pointedness. That is why he defines Samma Samadhi, that is concentration, at the 1st absorption, 2nd absorption, 3rd absorption, the 4th absorption. There is a difference of opinion in regard to the development of absorptions. Absorptions are not necessary for our path, but they play a vital role in developing your mind in pointedness to a very high degree. They give full control over your mind to yourself. If you do not do that, what happens means you may reach a stage when you will be completely having no control over your mind. There are persons whom I have experienced who have done that, not practicing any absorption, but concentrated for long periods, and ultimately they have entered void. Void in the sense where they have no sense of any feeling. And they live in that for hours sometimes and get out of it. And as they sit down, this development takes place, and they waste time being in that condition of mind. And some of them think that that is an attainment. But you see here, when you develop the mind of the one-pointedness, you are at a certain stage, you control the mind, so that you can stop the mind proceeding further from there onwards and bring it back to the normal condition. And that first stage is the first absorption. And from there you develop the second absorption, it's still higher condition of the mind. And when it reaches that point, well, you develop the second absorption where you have full control over the mind. You can stop the mind proceeding beyond that state by fixing the first second absorption and come down to the first, or directly down to the normal condition. To make it mind still sharper, you can enter the third absorption, result of practicing one-pointedness for a period. And once you have reached that stage, of course, you get rid of the sense of the body and the mind will be there in a state of tranquility. And there too, you have full control of the mind. It doesn't go beyond that because you have fixed the mind at that point. And the mind is completely under your control. And from there you go to the fourth stage where you live in a state of equanimity. There too you fix the mind at the fourth stage and it is there. The fourth absorption will fix it for you clearly. Now within that so-called dual space of one-pointedness, first absorption, second absorption, third absorption, the fourth absorption, you have full control over the mind. And you can, at any stage if you wish to, the development is good, you can go from the first to the third, third to the second, second to the fourth. Such changes can be done because you have practiced it so well, trained the mind so well, that it's fully under your control. And it is in a state of equanimity, brothers and sisters, that you will be able to realize the truth. Why? Because no obstruction is there to disturb the mind, create thoughts and interfere with your thinking. You fix your mind at a certain aspect of Dhamma and you think deep. I have always emphasized, even Buddha said that it is right thinking that has led him to the attainment of Buddhahood. In the same way, this development that you have acquired permits you to think in the right way, undisturbed. If somebody would ask the question, is this necessary for the attainment? It is necessary for the attainment because you have now sharpened the mind up to a point when it can realize something in depth and not found on the surface. Permanence, satisfaction and continuity are false values which you have created about the world and about things around you. And you have lived in these false values. Now you have trained the mind to realize the true state of things. And the mind is now ready to go into depth thinking about the wisdom that you are going to develop in your mind. What is that wisdom? Wisdom of impermanence, wisdom of unsatisfactory nature of things, and the wisdom of non-continuity, soullessness. These three truths or realities of life is not found on the surface, brothers and sisters. You have to think and realize and acquire them. And this one-pointedness which you have developed will immensely help you for that. Another question would be asked. Now, in practicing the realization of the truth of impermanence, unsatisfactory nature of things, the soullessness, do you practice absorption? It's not necessary. Because your mind is now sharpened. Then you fix it at one point and then think about it. Then you see the mind developing on its own to the heights which you have trained the mind to develop. And then what happens is, it's not just one point that there, but sharpness will be there in the mind for you to probe deep into any aspect of the Dhamma, and the realization come at a very high level of concentration. There is another aspect which I always emphasize in order to make it clear to you that the ordinary mind cannot realize the truth. It's only a transcendent mind that can realize the truth. You know that the consciousness creates thoughts. When the consciousness meets with an object through a sense base, and in creating that thought, it produces the five mental factors. Buddha has clearly given the values to these mental factors, and even called the consciousness a conjurer, a magician. Mental factors like contact he compared with form, collection of form which has no value at all except bubbles of water. Mental factor feeling compared to when a drop of rain falls on water, the bubble created there, it arises and passes away. That's all. That's the value it has. Mental factor perception compared to mirage, that you know. Mental factor volition is compared to, volitional activity compared to the tender plant and tree which has no pith at all. All wrappings of leaves, nothing else. No substance in that. And the consciousness compared to magician who always create things, delusions for you, mislead you. That is the normal working state of the mind of the average worldling, any worldling. Now those three truths which we are trying to realize, like impermanence, unsatisfactory nature of things, and the soullessness which are revealed to the world by Buddhas who appear in the world periodically to help the people, subjects or devotees to liberate themselves from the cycle of births, those are only found in depth, brothers and sisters, not found on the surface. What is found on the surface is the worldly way of doing things, but this is not worldly, this is against the worldly way, that you stop your further birth as a result of the realization you acquire. If a thought is created by the five mental factors and Buddha has attached no value at all to those mental factors and the definitions given clearly indicate they are very receptive, I ask you the question, how you are going to realize the truth by creating a thought? Any thought you create would be a thought created by the five mental factors, and they are completely misleading. They would never show you the truth. Then you would ask me the question, right? In transcending the mind to a higher state, aren't you making use of this consciousness? True, consciousness is energy, nothing else. But energy is refined by pitching it to a higher level in one-pointedness, transit to a higher state, when it has a certain amount of purity in it and gives that clarity in your thinking. In anything it is that. For instance, if you want to get the spirit of a thing, you see you have to either boil it or heat it or do something like that and get the unnecessary ingredients which have made it impure, and you get the pure stuff after that. In the same way, brothers and sisters, you are training the mind. The mind as it is in a worldling is all very impure, full of false beliefs, impregnated with lot of habits which you have completely subjugated yourself to lead a life in a worldly way. It's rather difficult to make use of a mind like that to realize the truth. And the only way one could make use of a mind to realize the truth is to pitch it to a higher level, and that you do by concentration. In connection with this, I would like to tell you, there is this clear instance where Buddha stated to Tapusa, a Brahmin who met him, that feelings and perceptions are present even if the mind is pitched to a higher level. And Buddha said that he managed to get rid of the feelings and the perceptions when he reached a higher level, very high level of realization. And if feelings and perceptions are still present in the mind, can you with that mind realize the truth? You can't. In the practice of insight knowledge, after you have developed your mind to a very high degree of concentration, you are not analyzing the object that you are analyzing to see the realistic aspect of things by first pitching your mind to a higher level. You start your normal thinking, analyzing it, and with that analysis you find the mind which has been now trained to pitch itself to a higher level by concentration. You see, when you concentrated on the subject and go on thinking, you find automatically the mind takes you to a very, very high level. A very high level. And it is at that level, brothers and sisters, that you get the ability to realize the truth. And at that level, there couldn't have been any deception in the mind. The mind is so clear, because it is pitching itself to a higher level of realization, getting rid of those deceptive nature of the mind. And it is that in that high level of clarity that the mind releases, or mind makes it make you to realize the true state of things. This aspect is very, very important. And Tapusa's interview with Buddha is very, very strong to create a clear picture of the usefulness of a developed mind. In Vipassana, there are no absorptions. Inside knowledge is realized through a transcended mind to a high degree. And the practice you went through in developing the mind to the four absorptions is sharpening the mind by a certain technique adopted by Buddha, so that the mind, when used to analyze certain things clearly, it automatically carries you to that higher state of understanding where the truth will be revealed to you. Take the case of the stream enterer. The stream enterer, he has prepared himself now to practice the insight knowledge. He has got rid of three strong fetters. And those fetters are doubt, practice of causes and unnecessary things not belonging to the path. And then to get rid of this sakkayadditti, that is the false belief of a being being present in you. Once the three fetters are cleared, then the realization dawns to you. And how does the realization dawn to you? The mind will develop itself to that high state of realization. And you find, you yourself will be convinced that I have now realize the first state. Because we have described you already in the discourses I gave you earlier about the manner you should practice vipassana or insight knowledge to get rid of this false belief of a being present in you, this sakkāya ditthi. In regard to the second fetter doubt, of course, that you realize at the stage of attainment of the first stage. Giving up of the cults and other practices which you are used to, that you will give up with the realization. Therefore, the first approach you make in the development of insight knowledge in your stream entry is to get rid of this sakkāya ditthi, this false belief of being present in you. And you are made to exercise, do certain things. Watch the body and mind carefully. Watch how actions or activities are committed as a result of cause and effect. When these things are observed very minutely by you, you are quite convinced that it is so. That conviction must be created in your mind. You are the person who will be convinced with that, because you have realistically understood how you commit acts and what part the mind plays in such commission of acts. Convincing. Then of course, I have always emphasized that we are pursuing a path for the realization of wisdom. And what is the wisdom that we are going to realize? The wisdom that we are going to realize is impermanence, unsatisfactory nature of things, and the soullessness. These are the three realities. At the stream entry, you will be realizing these three things, these three realities, up to a point, not fully. Therefore, in order to reach that state of understanding and realization necessary for you to qualify yourself to enter the stream, you will have to practice arising and passing away, arising and passing away, arising and passing away. And that also development of insight knowledge. And you go on fixing your mind on everything about arising and passing away, or less your objects, what you see, your activities, your thoughts that arise, and many other things that strike you at the moment to help you to realize this truth, you will see that there is this development again taking place in your mind, carrying your concentration to a higher level. As you go on analyzing what is arising and passing away, 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 then the realization that is suitable for the entry into the stream will dawn to you, and that through a transcended mind, brothers and sisters, and not just ordinary thinking. Then the question would be asked, does this realization dawn to everyone in the same way? No. I have emphasized the fact that if you take a collection of devotees, they are of different types of temperament. Capacity to understand in two differs. The strength of their development also differs up to a point. But the fact remains, once that has occurred, that you have entered the stream, you are convinced about it. Because up to that time you had the firm conviction in you that there was a being in you. Now you know that it is not so, it is cause and effect and nothing else. Doubt about the Dhamma, that naturally has occurred to you now because you see the truth. And more you dwell on this truth, you see the more convincing the truth is to you. So there is no doubt about the Dhamma. Then about cults that you are used to, you automatically get rid of those things with attainment. After all, you realize that there is no purpose served in pursuing these unnecessary cults and unnecessary practices. You confine yourself to the way the Dhamma developed within you. Now you have got to the three fetters. And how did you may I say, use the word, energize the mind for the realization? By dwelling on the impermanence. That is the essential thing. Which is the thing that we all expect to fully realize at the attainment of arahanthood. At the stage of stream entry, which is the first step, you begin to dwell on this subject of impermanence, 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 and then a maturity of that realization reaches you befitting the stream entry. And then you are convinced that it is this impermanence is perfectly true, and you see impermanence everywhere up to a point. Not fully, because there are other fetters that are tying down to you to the worldly way, and those have to be released for you to bring about clarity in the mind for the full realization. And you now work yourself upwards little by little by getting rid of those defilements, so that there will be perfectly clean consciousness. You see, reach to a very high degree of realization, and the truth dawns to it, and that truth is an indelible truth, and you are thoroughly convinced of what you have done. Therefore, bear in mind, you have to pursue this line of action patiently. You can't say, I have come for 2 weeks, or I have come for 1 month, therefore I must attain arahatthood before I go away. No one can help you in that manner. The effect of what you are practicing is realized by you. One can guide you up to a point, but the realization must dawn to you. That is what you are expecting to achieve. Now, once the stream entry is over, in that now you have thoroughly convinced that there is no being in you. Don't doubt about it. Sakkayadity is no longer there in you now. Then the next thing that is clear to you now is that there is arising and passing, you have realized up to a point. Not complete, but up to a point. Qualifying you to enter the stream, to pursue the path. In regard to doubt and giving up all those unnecessary practices, that naturally occurs to you, brothers and sisters, once you have reached that stream entry. You are not pursuing anything else, because now you have realized this is the truth. And one must live in this truth and practice this truth to achieve what you want. That realization will not permit you to pursue other cults, other practices, or to create a doubt about the Dhamma. Then in the silencing of the mind, I have shown you how the second and the third stages of development occur in you. Second and third stage of development deals directly with the two fetters of attachment and aversion. And I have emphasized on many occasions convincingly that these two things are created by you as a result of creating unnecessary thinking, thoughts. The spontaneous activity of the mind in creating a thought to enable you to experience something through a sense base is something that will happen. No one can stop that. But to pursue that object further from there onwards, if it is to your liking to enjoy it thoroughly with more and more thoughts created in your mind, that's all unnecessary. And you have got used to it now. Also, if the object is not your satisfaction, because you expect some satisfaction out of this exercise of yours in the way of seeing or hearing or smelling or tasting, etc. Therefore, there is naturally an aversion created in both the object. And these are two extremes which you naturally fall into as a worldly. And how? By unnecessarily creating thoughts after you have experienced the first thought, which is the occurrence as a result of a sudden incident in the nature of the sense-based meeting an object. And I emphasize that creation of thought is beyond one's control. So long as your eyes are open, so long as you are aware of what is happening around you, consciousness is there, such incidents occur. But may I ask you the question, who created this habit in you in thinking about what you have experienced through your eye in seeing, what you have experienced through your ear in hearing, what you have experienced through your nose in smelling, what you have experienced through your tongue in tasting, what you have experienced through your body in contacting and thinking? Who gave this? Who made you to create these thoughts? You got into a bad habit. Natural tendency is for you, when there is something to enjoy, to pursue that. Naturally, pursuing something to enjoy means creating thoughts. Enjoyment is the creation of thoughts in your mind, of building up satisfaction in you about the matter you are thinking. And if it is not to your taste, of course, naturally there will be thoughts of aversion. So these two things naturally occur to you. You did not know at that time when this occurrence took place that there are fetters that will tie down you to this worldly way, and you in a worldly manner practice these things in a natural way. They have become very, very strong in you. Reaction of the mind to something good and create thoughts of attachment. Reaction of the mind to something bad and create thoughts of aversion. But you have the ability, brothers and sisters, using your intelligence and your effort and perseverance, to check this production of thoughts, this unnecessary thinking. And what did Buddha advise you on this subject? He said, I will advise you on four things to be mindful. And those four things completely deal with yourself. As a human being, your body, then your mind. In regard to the mind, he said there are two things the mind can do: it can feel and it can think. Therefore, there are two subjects there pertaining to feelings, pertaining to thinking. And the fourth subject is the development of the mind, to get rid of false views you have created in the course of your life, in the sansara cycle of birth. And what is the advice he gave you to get rid of this unnecessary thinking? He said, you must be mindful. Essential feature is that. Be mindful. You must make an effort to maintain your mindfulness without allowing the mind to overcome that and lead you in the worldly way. Always making effort to be mindful. Mindful of what? Mindful of impermanence, unsatisfactory nature of things, and the soullessness. That is the mindfulness. And when the eye catches something and creates a thought, and the object is your satisfaction, there you are clearly reminded by mindfulness, don't pursue that. That is impermanent, unsatisfactory and soulless. That is how you are asked to check yourself. In so doing, what have you done, brothers and sisters? You have stopped thinking further about it. Isn't that clear? If that object was not your satisfaction, you would have created thoughts of aversion. And what Buddha said was, be mindful that that object is impermanent, unsatisfactory and soulless, therefore there is no necessity for you to create thoughts and create aversion to that object. What have you done there? There too you have stopped the unnecessary thinking. Be mindful. So in order to achieve the second stage and the third stage, second stage referring to once returner and the third stage referring to non-returner, you have only to get rid of those directly dealing with the six sense bases. controlling them so that you only see with your eyes and do not unnecessarily think. You hear with your ears and do not unnecessarily create thoughts of attachment to aversion. You experience smells through your nose and would not create attachment to aversion. And so are with the other sense bases. What have you done? Now we are watching the thinking carefully. You are watching. You are peeping towards you, inwardly to yourself, watching what is happening. And when such thoughts arise, you consider them as impermanent, unsatisfactory and soulless and dispel them. That's all. You go on dispelling like that, dispelling like that, dispelling like that. Realistically understand the true nature of the object. Not just telling the thought, go away, I don't want you. No. You carefully convince yourself that the thought has been created on a very false foundation. That it is permanent, that it is satisfactory and continuous. When the realistic aspect of that object is impermanent, unsatisfactory and soulless. So you bring that forward mindfully and say, this is the truth about this subject. Why should I think about this further? Dispose of the thought. Isn't that a realistic approach? Isn't that very convincing? And even, and Buddha, they are too in the four foundations of mindfulness. In other words, ask you to do the same thing in regard to feelings and in regard to realize, in regard to thoughts. Same thing. And the maturity in this exercise, you will realize how, when you go on practicing dispelling these unsteady thoughts that occur to you, you will see that there is a gradual reduction of creation of thoughts in you. Mind becomes peaceful, calm, quiet. And you are thoroughly convinced that you have now reached a very, very good standard. The thoughts that you created earlier, let's say 100 of them, now it has been reduced to about 50, and you see now there is an inner development making you to realize the impermanence again. And if necessary, you dwell on impermanence on any subject. And they love the mind again to reach that height of realization of the second stage. Very often, devotees come to us and tell us about their development. We know when they should now practice impermanence so that they give an start to the realization. And we say he has matured, he has come to maturity in that. Right now you practice this impermanence. And then of course realization comes. The third stage is rather difficult. Because you are completely getting rid of desire. And that needs a careful development on yourself, on your part. Again analyzing each thought as unnecessary. Of no purpose. Dispelling them as impermanent, unsatisfactory, soulless. And then you will realize the truth there too. When it reaches that stage of maturity where no thoughts occur now into your mind, after experiencing any sense-based activity, mind is peaceful, calm, quiet, well-settled, and you also experience the mind going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper to some depth. And that depth is depth of realization. Depth of the skill for you to realize the true nature of things in its full glory, in its fullness. And you are very peaceful, absolutely peaceful. And you would ask again the question, how would one know that one has realized these things? After all, it is the maturity that is taking place in you that will make you to realize that you have come to a stage, certain stage of development where you are not experiencing aversion, not experiencing attachment. You are very sober. About what? About all that you see, all that you hear, all that you smell, all that the sense-based experience. You are not excited about these things now. You have reached a peaceful stage. And that should dawn to you. If you are intelligent, following the path, The realization must come to you, and don't expect dictation or what do you call decision from others. The question very often asked is, how could one realize this? Who realizes? You realize. Think of your mind before you practice calmness in your mind. Think of the state of your mind before you practice giving up of all unnecessary thoughts. Your mind was one mass of activity, thought after thought arising, all kinds of thoughts, different types of thoughts, you see. Sometimes you yourself is surprised how I was thinking about this subject when without your knowledge you have got into a thought like that. And against that you have a very peaceful mind. Absolutely peaceful. When you look at the mind, nothing there. Emptiness. If you are developed the second stage, there are one few thoughts arising, and that thoughts you realistically now dispose of them. I mean, isn't that a realization by you? Should anybody probe into your mind and tell you, I see you have now reduced by 50% all that you are thinking? You can realize that. I always emphasize the fact that realization is yours and not others. Don't depend on anybody's dictation. You yourself know who you are and what you are. Because entire Buddhist philosophy is there with one view. And that view is to make you realize who you are truthfully. You now consider that you are a being when it is not so. And Buddha says you are just a causally created object, that's all. And it is that realization that we are following. In regard to the higher states, I have explained to you under the subject of keeping the mind silent, how they develop. There is no necessity for me to go through them over and over again, but always bear in mind, a teacher is necessary. There may be instances where, when a devotee confesses to the teacher that I have experienced these things, for the teacher to rightly understand and guide the pupil to follow the next step. For instance, if you make the teacher understand that your thinking has been stopped now considerably and you are very peaceful, about the norm, 50% of the normal thinking you have completely given up and the mind is very peaceful, then of course the teacher knows that you have reduce the effect of those fetters of attachment and aversion 50%. So we give you a subject of meditation to promote the realization of impermanence, unsatisfactory nature of things, the soullessness. And you practice that. And you then realize, I have achieved. If the achievement, if that practice has made you realize the truth, certainly it will convincingly make you feel that you have realized the second stage. One cannot give descriptions about the manner of behavior of the mind. I can assure you this, that in all these realizations, the first stage, your second stage, your third stage, your fourth stage, your mind is pitched to a very high level of realization. Just does not occur like a normal mind. The normal mind is subject to a lot of impurities. But you have, by developing yourself in one-pointedness, adopted technique where the mind now can develop itself to a high degree. And that technique was helpful for the development of that mind in the practice of vipassana, insight knowledge. And in that practice of vipassana, insight knowledge, you find the mind pitching itself to a very, very high degree. And some of you come and say, energy is rising in me. All those are terms which you use to describe this transcending of the mind to a high degree for the realization of the truth. And it is that transcendent mind that will realize the truth, not the ordinary mind. Therefore, brothers and sisters, I caution you, don't be over-enthusiastic. Patiently practice. The path is a very, very clear path. People, there are people who would disagree with us. But we completely comply with the four foundations of mindfulness. Completely comply. Though our activities may be not descriptive as described in the four foundations of mindfulness, but the meaning is very well accepted, pursued, and practiced. Now, making the mind silent. One example is, now for instance, if you, Buddha says in feelings, when you get a feeling of either good or bad or neutral, then you are expected to analyze that feeling mindfully. And do not allow the mind to fall into the two categories of attachment to aversion. We do that. What we do is there, when such a feeling occurs, we analyze that thought as impermanent, unsatisfactory, soulless, and push it away quietly. Without allowing it to us to, without making us to create that aversion of attachment. We push it away. Isn't that the same thing you are expected to do in the four foundations of mindfulness? Same thing. Now in regard to thinking, there are eight thoughts that you have to practice at the very inception, in the foundation of mindfulness on thinking. And that is to clear your mind of all the hindrances and keep the mind clean. What are the hindrances? Thoughts of attachment. Thoughts of aversion, thoughts making you feel sleepy, leading to torpor, thoughts make you always unsteady, various kinds of thoughts rush into the mind, and thoughts of doubt. So what we are doing is, when the mind is being very well washed by us, we don't allow any of those things to happen here. We identify those thoughts carefully and say, go away. We don't want that. Would not encourage the consciousness to pursue in producing such thoughts by discouraging the rising of such thoughts and dispelling them out of your mind. Thereby, the consciousness is also cautious. And it produces less and less thought, because now you are attacking the habit of the consciousness in producing unnecessary thoughts by tackling every such thought as unsatisfactory, as impermanent, and soulless, and despairing them. Same approach. So poor people who cannot understand what we are doing, They give interpretation of the four foundations of mindfulness without truly understanding the true Dhamma embedded in that four foundations of mindfulness. That Dhamma that is there, the approach Buddha made. And how he made that effort? Yes, use words. So many people give various interpretations of these words and do various types of things. But isn't it the truth that what we are directly dealing is really in keeping with the gist of that advice or instruction given by Buddha? Feel the clear answer to that. Now, so to say, the realistic truth embedded in that Dhamma, we are practicing. That is why, brothers and sisters, that we are in a position to develop in you, if you sincerely follow our instructions, results faster than some others experience. So certain people say, oh, they produce very clear results in very, very, very short time. Naturally happens when you understand a thing clearly and you know what you should do and should not do. And if you keep away from not permitting the mind to follow tracks you see that promote the false values of life, you now direct the mind to follow the true state of things and then deal with it directly in an understanding manner, that's bound to be the result. We are not taking our hand right round behind our head to touch the nose. We are touching the nose directly in front with the hand, and that is the shortest cut. If I describe the approach we make, that is what we are doing. Because we see the truth. We see the approach made by Buddha in its clearness, and we practice what he has advised us to do. May I say I have no doubt. There may be hundreds and hundreds of deities in the deity world who have heard Buddha's words, and in my own way I feel they agree with our path. They agree with our path. And they say this is a clear approach made by Buddha, and we have following that approach clearly. So brothers and sisters, don't have any doubts. It is the practice and the good results you achieve through the practice that will convince you where you are. We have one bright example in Venerable Ananda Arahat, who lived with Buddha, looked after him, even at his deathbed, heard all the Dhamma he has preached, either listening to the preaching or what Buddha has told him subsequently. In spite of that, and in spite of the encouragement given by Buddha for him to attain, he did not attain. Buddha passed away and he is still the stream enterer. And he tried his best prior to the assembly of bhikkhus to discuss Dhamma, that he would qualify to attend that assembly. He went through the whole night practicing Dhamma and ultimately came to a conclusion that he will not be able to achieve this. In utter misery, or I should say loss of courage, he was about to go to sleep when he attained. So that is the nature of Dhamma, brothers and sisters. Don't fix table times and say 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 1 week, 2 weeks, I'll attain. Because what you have gathered in the past, no one can assess. And those impurities have to be cleared by you and you alone. That is why Buddha said, seek no refuge from outside. Seek refuge from within. I have given you sufficient instructions for you to follow and clean the inside so that you are fit to liberate yourself from this cycle of birth. You have had sufficient instructions on these subjects. And I know that all of you are making a good effort. And I am satisfied that all of you will attain in this birth Nibbana. May you all attain Nibbana. Thank you.